Welcome, one and all, to Project Geekology, episode 71. I'm one half of your host, Dakota, and I'm joined as always with...
Anthony.
And I hope you're ready to walk through a mysterious island caught in a perpetual storm that's evaded anyone from actually checking it out for hundreds, maybe thousands of years at this point. We're looking for big monkeys, guys. Huge monkeys. Monstrous 100-foot monkeys. Bring mosquito repellent. You're probably going to need it. We're discussing Kong Skull Island, the 2017 movie by Legendary. The second movie in their MonsterVerse series. And it's held up pretty well. I'm excited to talk about it, Anthony.
Yes. Well, I think the reason why we haven't been able to find it is because we haven't tried to fly through that storm with Vietnam-era helicopters.
Yeah, you know, they almost didn't make it. But I think, you know, after they actually did make it, the big hurdle after that point was, you know, the big monkey.
Looking for the monk.
Yeah, for the monk.
The Winston.
Anthony, before we talk about Kong Skull Island and all its wonders, what have you been up to?
Well, you know, I went back to watch Kong Skull Island and,
really?
Of course. And actually, right after that, I decided to hop into Monarch. It's actually a really good show to start watching after Kong Skull Island. Like, it works so well.
Yeah. You texted me and you were, without spoiling too much, there's a brief scene in the beginning of Monarch, in Monarch Legacy of Monsters, that has John Goodman's character of Bill Randa from the Kong Skull Island movie in like a almost like a deleted scene / found footage type introduction to the show, where it's a scene that was like not necessarily cut away from the Kong Skull Island movie because it was never filmed for that movie. It was filmed separate for the Monarch show, but it's like he's recording found footage after his helicopter goes down and he's running from, you know, just giant monsters in the woods. The whole show kind of starts with that mystery of like, what did Bill Randa like what files did Bill Randa throw into the water, and how does that involve the unfolding mystery throughout the entire Monarch show? How far did you get into that, let me ask you?
So I'm a few episodes in.
Okay, what do you think?
So far I like it. It's definitely interesting. It's cool seeing like a perspective of that like 2014 Godzilla movie, like from, you know, somebody that was like on that bridge,
right.
The San Francisco, you know,
the Golden Gate Bridge.
Like he busted right through it, and you know, there's somebody that's like literally there dealing with that, and it's, you know, she's gotten like, you know, PTSD from that. But it's cool seeing that, you know, in how it kind of, how the world has changed since that event happened.
Yeah, in the show they call it G-Day, so it's like what the day that Godzilla attacked San Francisco is known as G-Day, which is kind of a cool like in-universe thing that we didn't know before this. But it's cool how they basically like tie events before and after G-Day to create a narrative around these characters who aren't necessarily like big characters in the monster films or monster verse. They're not like directly attached to like the Monarch organization, but they have ties to it within their family. It uses that narrative to like follow people who are, for, you know, for all intents and purposes, normal people in this crazy new world that was unleashed after Godzilla showed up. So I think it's really the way that it weaves together those events in Godzilla and then in Kong Skull Island, which we're going to talk more about, you know, later in this episode. I think it's so cool.
I agree. So far, it's been a pretty good watch, and I'm excited to finish it up because, like, a lot of people are like, you got to get to the end.
It's so actually, like, some of the stuff in the final three episodes, like, really blew me away. There's a lull. I mean, most shows have a lull somewhere in the middle. But, like, there's a couple episodes in the middle there where I'm just kind of like, I just don't understand why this is taking so long. But then it all finally comes into place. And I highly recommend it. You should definitely, you know, get through it. It's worth it. It's definitely worth your while.
Oh, no, I'll definitely finish it up. But yeah, I've been watching that. And I've also been watching this anime called Solo Leveling. And it's really good, man.
Talk to me about it.
So Solo Leveling takes place in a world. It's got, you know, this video game elements, but it's real. Instead of somebody being transported into a video game world, it's the world. And so there are these like magical gates that had been like opening across, like, you know, the land. You know, you got all these like, you know, monsters and creatures that are coming through these gates. But along with these gates opening, people start getting these like magical powers, and they can fight these monsters and like close these gates. And they're all ranked from S to E. And so like the main character is, you know, he's like literally the worst hunter. They call him hunters. He's literally the worst hunter like ever. Like his like power level is like super low. He gets like, you know, even like the weakest goblins like give him issues. And so it kind of, you know, it centers around him, and, you know, some stuff happens, and then he starts seeing these like video game screens, you know, like daily quests and inventory and leveling and like, you know, attributes and all that stuff. And, you know, this isn't something that everybody sees. And so, like, you know, even like there's moments where he's like, hey, do you see this thing? And they're like, see what? And he's like, oh, never mind.
So let me get this straight, because I'm trying to follow along, and maybe this will benefit the listening audience as well if they don't know what Solo Leveling is. So this is like the real world.
Yes.
Plus some portals that have started, you know, bringing monsters into it.
Right. It's the real world, like modern day, with like fantasy elements where you have like goblins and like different like monsters and creatures on the other side of these gates. And these gates, when they open, hunters go in to close them before there's like a breakout event, which is the monsters coming into the real world. And then, you know, that they have to pretty much fight and, you know, suffer collateral damage and stuff.
Okay, so because he is now able to see these video game elements that are popping up in this real world scenario, is the general consensus, like while watching it, that like there's a bigger conspiracy going on, that like he's actually becoming like sentient within whatever simulation is going on, or it's just like a special power that he's been given?
So, I mean, I haven't read the manga, but there hasn't really been like an explanation given. I, you know, I don't want to dive too deep, but it happened after an event in the beginning of the anime. You know, he kind of goes unconscious after this moment, and then kind of comes back, and he's able to see these screens. And that's not normal, even for like regular, you know, other hunters. Other hunters don't see this.
So does that help him in his solo leveling career? Like, does that give him hints as to how to better his craft to
so level up, so now he can like actually he can actually he can game, like build can he, game? He could build up different attributes that he
okay,
has.
Okay, so he can game been the system it, a little bit.
Yeah, he's been putting it mostly like into strength. But the thing is that in this world, when somebody most hunter or like pretty much all the hunters that like, you know, once you're set in a specific ranking, S, you know, S all the way through E, like you're there. That is it. There's no leveling up. So he kind of unlocks this ability to level up pretty much.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Cool. All right.
So that actually sounds really interesting. Yeah.
I want to check that out. So is it a long running anime? I've heard about it before. I just have never checked it out.
It's brand new. Like the anime is like at like 6 episodes in now.
Okay. So it's
so
it's
the manga has been out for a bit, and it's been popular, but the anime just came out. So yeah, we're not like seasons deep. It's like literally like not even a season yet.
Oh wow. All right, so I gotta check it out. It's on Crunchyroll, I'm guessing.
Yes, definitely.
All right.
Yeah, so, you know, just been doing a bit of that, and yeah, man, you know, gaming, playing my Persona. Overwatch 2 is going through like a really big major overhaul with their competitive system starting tomorrow, so I'm gonna definitely hop into that and check it out. They're revamping the way that you rank up, so that it's a lot, like, you get more feedback and it's a lot more visual. Like before, you had to win like a set amount of games, and then you would either go up or down in rank depending on how many times you lost. You know, it wasn't really clear cut like where you stood, so this is supposed to fix that.
Okay,
so
cool, man, that's awesome.
So yeah, there's been stuff like that on, but yeah, man, other than that, not all that much craziness going on. How about you? What have you been up to? I know that we just spoke when we recorded our Godzilla 1954, but you know, what have you been up to this past week?
Yeah, actually, so we're recording this on a Monday, and we recorded our last episode on a Friday, so only a couple days have passed, but it was an eventful weekend for me. I was able to finish all like the research and the note taking that I needed to do for my upcoming like YouTube project with the Monsterverse. It's been nice talking about Godzilla these past couple episodes, but it's even nicer being able to talk about the Monsterverse, which is what I'm actually going to be covering on YouTube. So, because I've taken like loads of notes, dude, I have like 18,000 words of like timeline notes across all the films, all the shows, and I finally finished Monarch. You know, it takes a lot of time doing like notes for timeline stuff, like behind this, like background stuff to like stuff people say. So yeah, like I'm not even like exaggerating. It's 18,000 words of stuff that I've like sifted through. I'm super happy. I'm finally like in the writing phase of my next project, and it's not going to be 18,000 words. It's probably going to be closer to like 5,000 or 6,000 words, like the actual script. But I'm excited to talk about Kong today, because you know, it'll keep me in that mindset, and hopefully I can get some writing done this coming week before I take my trip to Florida,
down to the land
of the alligators and manatees. Yes. Yeah, it'll actually feel a lot more like Kong Skull Island down in Florida than it does here in New York, so it'll be nice. You know, it'll feel like you know, wading into
you'll be in the element, you know, you'll be able to get in the mindset of Kong Skull Island for when you talk about it.
I gotta bring some like cargo shorts and like camo shirts. Yeah, why don't we jump into Kong Skull Island while we're here? I don't think I have too much else to say as far as like what I've been up to, besides the fact that, and I don't think we've mentioned it on the podcast, Anthony and I have a new system going in terms of like output, so that we can get more episodes to you more regularly. We're trying to do a weekly release on Mondays. We've been doing that for the past couple weeks now. We hit you guys with Mean Girls a couple weeks ago. We hit you with, you know, as of recording today, we just released our Godzilla Minus One review, so that's a couple weeks back at this point for you guys. But we're going in a way that we didn't go, that we've never even considered before. So basically, like when we first started, the first couple years of the podcast, I was editing every podcast, and I think I kind of burned out a little bit because I was also doing,
and that was a weekly release. You had a weekly release thing going on with the podcast, and so, you know, we had that going for a little while. We wanted to, you know, I kind of missed doing the weekly release. You know, the bi-weekly stuff was good for a season, but you know, I decided to come up with the idea of, you know, hey, you know, Dakota and I should kind of come together with the editing, and kind of, you know, mentally it feels like we're only editing bi-weekly, but like we're really releasing weekly.
Yeah, so we can record once a week, but only one of us has to edit, you know, that week. So every other week we switch off. So Anthony will record, or Anthony will edit like last week's episode, and I'll edit this week's episode, and so on and so forth. So I think that should, you know, theoretically be, make the creation, the actual workload of this podcast much lighter, because believe it or not, folks, there's a lot of editing that goes into something like a podcast, even if it sounds like, you know, you're just talking. There's a lot of like wasted space. There's a lot of like ums. There's a lot of just background noise that you have to like try to, you know, get rid of. But I think this will be better for the podcast as a whole. What do you think, Anthony?
I agree. That's why as of like listening to this episode, you all have seen a kind of like an uptick in episodes being released. This is that system coming into play, and we just want to get more episodes out. We really enjoy it, and it gave us a reason to get together and kind of chat weekly, catching up with each other and then talking about stuff that we enjoy. And it also, I don't know about you, but I feel like when we do talk, it helps with the brainstorming of what we should record next. So
yeah, believe it or not, most of the things that we decide to record, we kind of figure out around the end of a podcast where we're just like, yes. You want to cover this next week? And we're both like, oh yeah, huh? Yeah. So yeah, you're definitely right. All right, let's jump into Kong Skull Island. So Kong Skull Island is the second movie in the legendary Monsterverse. It's, you know, Legendary has got licensing rights to use some of Toho's characters, including Godzilla. Godzilla being the main guy. Obviously, in the third movie, in the line, they were able to bring in Ghidorah, Rodan, Mothra, some of the greats from you know, the Japanese monster series that Toho produced. So it's really cool that they were able to also use Kong. Now they can't call him King Kong, so because that's technically still something owned, I think it's by MGM, if I remember correctly.
Right. I was gonna say, because King Kong, you know, or Kong predates Godzilla by like 20 yeah. years?
Almost 20 years. Yeah, I think it's 1938 versus 1954, so it's like
okay, so it's getting it's definitely a lot older. I think like back then it was a silent film, if I remember correctly. I don't think it was. No,
I don't think it was. There were silent aspects to it, but I don't think the whole thing was silent. But it was, you know, it was a huge step up for filmmaking at the time. The first King Kong movie. The character of Kong was used in like the Toho era movies. I think it was like the third or fourth Godzilla movie where it was like Godzilla versus King Kong, or Godzilla. Let me look that up really quick. It might be Godzilla versus Kong or Godzilla versus King Kong. It was King Kong versus Godzilla. So I don't know how they got the rights to use the term King Kong, like how Japan and Toho got the rights to that, but they did. And they made a pretty silly movie, but it's still fun to watch. Maybe one of these days we'll cover it. I doubt it, but we'll see.
I think the next one we're covering is probably the best Godzilla of all time, Son of Godzilla.
Oh yeah, yeah. You kind of need to like work our way up to that one, Anthony. Like that's a real good one. Like we don't want to waste that one.
That one definitely a whopper, you know?
Yeah. I would actually like to do Shin Godzilla. I haven't watched it, but everyone considers that among the top three, alongside the original Godzilla and Godzilla 1954. So that's something I want to watch. But we're going off on a little tangent here. Basically, Legendary got the rights to use Kong, not King Kong, but Kong. And they'll use, like, he's the king in advertising, but they won't use the term King Kong.
Right. And they say that throughout the movie that he's the king.
Yeah, they do. They really play with that licensing loophole. But
we didn't say it together.
Uh-oh, we never called him King Kong. I would never. That's clearly Kong.
He's just the king.
He's just the king of this island. As the second movie, they were able to like move away from the world of Godzilla and actually like turn the clock back a little bit. So Godzilla took place in 2014. This movie takes place in early 1973. And what's great about that is that it's the end of the Vietnam War. So most of the characters in this are coming straight from the war, and they still have, you know, like, bomb everything attitude into Skull Island, which doesn't work out for them.
Yeah, seriously. They have that, you know, and think about this, like, a lot of them, yeah, they're coming from Vietnam, so imagine the horrors that they witnessed there.
Yeah.
And then going into this place, and then, like,
it's a whole different set of horrors.
It's a whole, seriously, like, you know, you're dealing with, you see this massive, massive gorilla. And, like, dude, that would freak me out, dude. Like, if I seen a gorilla that large, like, you're like, dude, what? And then you have those, like, the skull.
The skull crawlers.
Yes. They're like even weird, you know, they're like a lot creepier too.
Yeah, so they're bipedal creatures, but like they only have like four arms. So it's not like they're standing on two legs, they're just crawling on two legs, and their head's a big skull basically. They're crazy creatures because like they're basically born with an insatiable hunger, so they will just like continue eating and like being vicious. So they're just like a formidable foe, and basically like you can find out like in ancillary content like the comics and some of the novelizations, they talk about how the skull crawlers actually killed Kong's parents like right when he was born. Basically like Kong was born into a world where his parents were dying basically because they were fighting these skull crawlers. So I just think that's like a pretty metal origin story for, you know, a giant fighting ape.
And you know what's crazy is that, like, you see how because they touch upon that in the movie, and you see how massive Kong is in this film. And, you know, was it John C. Reilly's character? I forgot his name.
Marlowe.
He says that Kong is still growing. I'm like, this guy's already massive and he's still growing?
Yeah, so in this movie, his height is about 100 feet. By the time of Godzilla versus Kong, he's a 300-foot ape. So he's way bigger. And around the time of Godzilla versus Kong, at least the novelization claims that he's almost fully grown. So, yeah. So he's going to get a lot bigger after 1973. But, yeah, it'll take a little time.
Which we'll cover that film down the line.
Yeah, I mean, I think the audience wants it. I'll be honest. I don't know too much about what the audience wants, but I have a feeling this is something the audience wants, because our Godzilla 2014 episode, which is, you know, way over a year old at this point, probably 2 years old at this point, for whatever reason, that movie and that podcast is like getting an unnatural amount of listens for, you know, back episodes, like backlog episodes for us, you know, like
right at I think this I got time
24 episodes, like 24 25 downloads for like within a week, which is crazy for an old episode. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a lot for an old episode. So
right
people, well, are for clearly a looking podcast for
our
it.
Size
yes, we're tiny, we're not big monkey,
we tiny. We are not.
But anyway, what did you think about John C. Reilly's character? We talked about him briefly when we covered, or at least I talked about him briefly when we covered Godzilla Minus One, and how like the writing in Godzilla Minus One is very different from the writing you would see in like Kong Skull Island, because John C. Reilly kind of talks like a contemporary human, even though he's from World War II. You know, like his jokes kind of are more modern feeling. I don't know.
Right. Like he doesn't seem like somebody that had spent like many years in an island, you know, like he was with pretty much a primitive civilization, and he still maintained a lot of his, I don't know, like what would you call it, like his just like decorum almost, you know, like he didn't regress to a primitive way, like he still kind of maintained his like, you know, present world sense somehow. I don't know, you know, maybe it was because he was building boats out of planes and stuff. Yeah. Or that boat out of a plane.
Yeah, so I like his story ultimately. I think it's a very heartwarming story from like the beginning of the movie, when it's like 1944, you have an American Air Force guy and a Japanese pilot basically attack, like dogfighting above Skull Island, and they crash land on the island. And, you know, they take their fight out of their planes and into the woods, or into the jungle rather, and that's where they meet Kong for the first time. And they, you know, obviously it freaks them out because there's a giant monkey. You know, seeing Kong for the first time really put their predicament into new light. And they somehow worked through their prior hatred of each other because of nationalistic, you know, warfare, wartime, you know? So clearly they were picked up by the Iwi people who were on Skull Island already. And they, you know, found a way to, like, basically become brothers. I think that's what John C. Reilly said at a certain point, is that Gunpei Ikari became his brother. And they eventually, like, created this craft that they were going to try to get out of Skull Island. But I think they said that he was very recently taken by a Skullcrawler.
Yeah, I forgot what it was that had killed him. But yeah, no, you're right. They did build this brotherhood, because remember he takes his, you know, his katana that was on his grave, and he uses it as a weapon. And he even, like, speaks Japanese before fighting one of the skull crawlers. So there's definitely a closeness that was built there, you know, and obviously he learned some Japanese and whatnot from him. So there was a brotherhood that was built there. And I thought that was, like, interesting, because I did like that they had that, you know, even though they had their differences, they put it aside because there was something going on that was bigger than what their issues were.
There's a line where he says, "Me and Gunpei spent 6 years of our lives building this thing." And obviously it was a piece of junk. It was all that they could manage with the, you know, the two planes that they had crash landed and random parts from, like, holes of ships, basically, that they could scrounge together. So it was cool at the end of, you know, by the end of the movie, seeing the new people on Skull Island helping him finish what Gunpei and him started, so that they can actually do something and get out of there. So that was cool. What did you think of John Goodman's character, Bill Randa, and, you know, the Bill Rand, like, and comparing that to the Bill Randa of the Monarch TV show?
His character, he was definitely, you know, eccentric. Like, he was so obsessed with, you know, finding this creature. And Monarch kind of touches base on, like, where his obsession started with finding these, they call them Titans, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's essentially what Kong is, you know. He's looking for this Titan named Kong, or I don't think he knew the name at that point, but he just knew that there was an island and that there could be potentially something there, you know.
Yeah, there were, like, under clearly the guise legends of
geological survey,
there were clearly legends of the island, and yes, now there was you know, satellite proof of the island. I like the idea at the beginning of this, you know, it's like the end of wartime. You know, Reagan's saying, you know, he's seen on the monitors in, like, the White House delivering a message to the people, basically saying that we're bringing the troops back, you know, like the time there in Vietnam is going to be over very soon. And that's why Bill Randa realized, like, if we're ever going to get funding for this expedition, it has to be while the, you know, military is still out there. It has to be while they're still getting funding out there. So that's when he makes a last ditch effort, which actually saved Monarch from extinction, because, like, they were already kind of on the way out at that point. Like, it was Bill Randa and like Houston Brooks at that time, who that was the other guy that he was with. Houston Brooks, he had the idea that, like, the earth was hollow, and that's how the Titans got around. And actually, that's one of the things that they were looking for on Skull Island, was some proof that Hollow Earth was kind of, or that Skull Island was kind of like a hub for, you know, the Hollow Earth theory, basically, you know, which is later expanded on in future movies like Godzilla versus Kong. They have a whole, like, journey into Hollow Earth, basically.
Yes,
so it's all kind of connected in that way. And I think that's why the MonsterVerse appeals to me so much is that, like, even though, like, the timeline's kind of wonky, like, if you really dig into it, there's a lot of plot holes, like, a lot of plot holes. The actual idea and the actual, like, mythology and legends that, like, they push together to create these, like, crazy notions and, like, pseudoscience, it's fun. You know, it's one of the funner things. Like, it's one of the funner universes we have to, like, explore in right now. I don't know, man. I think it's so fun.
No, I agree. It's really cool that they've gone and built, like, a new age of the MonsterVerse, because, like you said in the last episode, you know, the Godzilla 1954, is that, you know, they had this, like, Toho universe thing going on. And then now, like, more recently, we've only really been getting one-off Godzilla movies, you know, one-off, you know, and even, like, King Kong, you know, we had King Kong, what, back in 2006? These were all, like, one-off movies. And, you know, now we're starting to get something that's, you know, kind of like a, you know, kind of like an MCU or a DCEU. It's a shared universe with these giant, you know, creatures, and, you know, they're gonna somehow connect Pacific Rim in there, you know.
that would be insane.
That would be so crazy. They'd be like, how did y'all do this?
They'd need to, like, do, like, a multiverse sort of thing for that to actually be a possibility. But yeah, that would be crazy. But like you were saying, it is kind of MCU-ified. I think the MCU had pretty spectacular and, you know, I would say damaging effects on, like, the Hollywood scene in general. Like, after Avengers was so popular in 2012, everybody, literally everybody, wanted a piece of that. Everyone was like, we have a bunch of characters, we can make a universe. You know, Man of Steel was already in production. They're like, we can make a whole universe out of this character. The Godzilla 2014 movie sparked the legendary MonsterVerse. I don't think that was originally intended to be a whole universe.
I don't think so either.
It didn't feel like it.
No, it didn't. And, I mean, up until that point, I don't think that anything like that was being hinted to.
Right. I mean, it may have been, but we weren't really paying too much attention to the Godzilla side of things at that point. But I do think that what the MonsterVerse has is pretty special. I think that the idea of these giant, bumbling, you know, kaiju, titans, mutos, is just such a fun concept, and, like, that they've remained hidden for millennia until now, until they're like waking up. And of course, Kong has been around for a little while, you know, without having been in hibernation or anything like that. But that's because he was hidden on Skull Island. And I think what makes it work is that, like, you are seeing the evolution of these creatures throughout these movies, but it's the people that, you know, you're actually following that are telling the narrative or are experiencing it firsthand. And I think that's what makes this special and like in relation to something like the MCU. Like, the MCU, you're following the heroes.
Yeah.
You don't follow the daily civilians, you know, unless you're watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
With the MonsterVerse, you're following the humans pretty much the entire way. And usually the humans are following the Titans, but that's besides the point. It's got its own special sauce, and I think that that's pretty cool.
Right, yeah. I feel like it would be tough to do, like, a 2 to 2.5 hour movie of just, like, the monsters fighting. Like, there's got to be something mixed in that. There's got to be something at stake, something that adds to, you know, why this, whatever is going on, is a crisis. And that's where, the human interaction to it. Yeah. Why are they fighting? You know, understanding the science behind it. You know, what are these creatures? Where are they coming from? You know, like, it's all, like, valid. It makes sense. Like, if these things started coming out of nowhere, we would want to know where the heck they're coming from. Is it from space, or were they just dormant somewhere in a mountain, you know?
Yeah. What did you think of some of the, like, cinematography in this movie? Because there's some, like, really cool shots.
There is. Skull Island, like, the location was beautiful.
Yeah, it had that Vietnam, like, feel.
Oh,
to
it. Absolutely! It was like, it felt like putting, like, those guys were being put right back into the same setting, except they were in an island that looked like a skull, like the satellite image looked like a skull.
Yeah, it's cool. It is. I think it was a cool idea to use Vietnam soldiers for like a number of reasons, but it just gives the movie a certain wartime vibe, you know, like they still are at war, even though they're not technically at war with anyone on the island. They make war when they encounter Kong.
You got that in Samuel Jackson's character. Like he still, like he wasn't over the fact that they, in his mind, quote, you know, quote unquote, abandoned the war, you know, that they didn't lose, they just abandoned it. And so he was looking for his victory here.
Yeah, it's such an interesting character dynamic. He's got one of the more interesting characters in this movie, because like you said, the war's not over for him. He doesn't feel like they've completed their mission. He wants to continue the battle, like no matter what. There's actually even in the beginning of the movie, like before they get the call to go to Skull Island, like he's debating whether or not to bring his troops back home. Like they have leave, like they're good to go, but he's willing to risk all their lives just for another mission. Like he's happy, like you got it.
He was so happy when he had received that mission, dude. Like he was.
You feel bad for the people who had to go because
they were this close. They were so close. They were so close to going home, and like, dude, like I said, like they experienced some horrors in that war. You know, they were ready to go home, and then now they're getting sent to some place that they don't know of. They don't know what the enemy or what's gonna go on in this island. And you know, just like right off the bat, like them getting there, it starts off terribly because they have to get through that storm through the you know, with these helicopters that could easily go down.
To kind of juxtapose like the military aspect of this movie, you also had Brie Larson's character, I think her name is Mason Weaver,
yes,
or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, Mason.
And she's a wartime photographer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Samuel Jackson's character he's not mean to her, but he kind of like puts her in like a place, like he kind of like pushes her away because he believes that the fact that photography and videography within Vietnam was so prevalent that they lost the war at home, which is why they ended up losing the war in Vietnam.
Yes.
I think that's his stance on her, and I think that's just such a cool like back and forth, even though they don't explore it too much. But you know, getting to know these characters on that level, like this person Mason is very much you know, anti-war. She wants to bring as you know, she wants to explore what's actually happening in reality through photography, versus this person who doesn't want the war to end, and he's willing to risk the lives of 100 men basically.
And she was deep in it. She was in the fight too. Not like she didn't fight obviously, but she was in like dangerous areas because she had mentioned where she was, and he's like, "Oh wow, like you were in there, you know?"
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's
then there's a like a mercenary type character that is played by Tom Hiddleston, James Conrad.
I'm happy he was in this movie.
Yeah, he's a forgettable character, unfortunately. He's a forgettable character, unfortunately, but he's cool. His presence is pretty badass. You know, like it's just kind of he's there, he chops some monsters up.
Yeah, I like him in this movie. It's just I hadn't seen it in so long. But it was cool seeing him in there, Brie Larson. They're already like co-workers from the MCU, so
actually, I don't think they were at that point.
Brie Larson wasn't, but
he was. He was.
Yeah. So by the time they do, like, you know, she comes into the MCU, they've already worked together doing this.
Yeah. True.
But yeah, his character was interesting, and you know, there was a couple of the soldiers that you know, they kind of highlighted also.
There were some like crazy character deaths.
Randa.
Randa. What, it's so funny that like Bill Randa, who ends up becoming such like a big character name in the Monarch Legacy of Monsters series, is just kind of a throwaway character at this point. You know, like, this is his last hurrah at Monarch. It's his last hurrah in life, really. He's taken by...
Skullcrawler.
Yeah, he's taken by a Skullcrawler after, like...
They're, like, in that boneyard.
Yeah, he takes a picture, and for whatever reason, the film kind of, like, blows up a little bit in his face, and, like, the camera starts malfunctioning, and, like, that's what draws the attention of the Skullcrawler, and it takes him out. And it eats him right up, including the camera that's still flashing every couple seconds. And it's kind of cool because they're in the fog and you could see like where the Skullcrawler is because like the flash inside the Skullcrawler is still going off. So there's stuff like that. There's also the soldier who, you know, who is trying to like risk his own life by like he pulled out a grenade and he was ready to let it to like throw it at the Skullcrawler, but the Skullcrawler like whipped a tail and threw him into the mountainside.
So he was trying to get eaten by the Skullcrawler with the grenades.
Yes.
And so he could blow it from the inside, but like that thing was not like, I'm thinking like, did it realize that like something wasn't right and decided to whip him instead of eating?
Probably not.
Why did it whip him instead of eat? Like, because they literally were trying to eat everybody else, but for some reason they whipped him.
That's a good question. I don't have an answer for you. I don't think anyone has an answer for you. That's like a very contentious scene online. Not contentious, that's the wrong word. But people are like always commenting on like Twitter about how extra that scene is. Like, this is the most unnecessary character death, or like the most out of pocket character death. And it's hilarious, actually. It's a very funny character death because you expect him to be all heroic. He's going off in slow motion and the Skullcrawler tail whips him and he lets go of the pin on the grenade too late. Or like, yeah, he lets it go after like he hits the mountainside and it's just an explosion off into the distance. And it's just so out of pocket.
Yeah, man. He got blown up. Like, you were thinking he was going to get eaten, but he got tail whipped.
There were a couple other like monsters that popped up on Skull Island in this movie. There's the giant spider thing that almost had like bamboo shaped legs.
Yes, those things were crazy.
Yeah, that actually was terrifying. They call them Mother Long Legs. Like that's their official name. And are Mother Long Legs for real.
We don't like Mother Long Legs. Daddy Long Legs are okay. Mother Long Legs,
too big. Too big, go home. There's also like the leaf wings that they shoot at. They're almost like pterodactyl type creatures, but they're like made of like a more leafy texture, or they look more like leaves. I don't know.
Somebody gets like destroyed by like a flock of them.
And there's also like a kraken in the water, like a giant squid that Kong, you know, briefly attacks and then eats, like slurps up.
Well, like Kong, like it started attacking Kong.
Yeah, Kong was just trying to like bait.
He was just like strolling through the water, gets attacked by this like kraken. And I mean, look, you know, it's like, oh, Kong's like, well, I guess I have lunch.
Yeah.
Because he like eats some of it and just like drags it with him.
There's like the visual effects in this movie are insane. Like some of the close-ups of Kong, like especially like when he's like eating the squid, it looks great. But later when he's fighting the big Skullcrawler and he has like he gets kind of like stuck in the chains of like an old ship.
Oh, and
then
yes.
He ends up using like a chain attached to a propeller to use as a whip, or like a cat of nine tails whip on the Skullcrawler. Dude, that was like, it's so epic. It's like, it's so ridiculously epic.
It was really, yeah, like, Kong is smart. Like, Kong is, like resourceful. Yeah.
He's a very intelligent monkey.
And I think that's why he could see that there were some of those humans. Like, he didn't, like, the native people would all be dead if Kong wanted it to be so, you know? So yeah, I think Kong realized was like, if you respect me, I won't mess with you. That's why, like, when Mason had that encounter with him, I think that Kong saw that she was trying to help that, like, bison creature. you know, like she was trying to lift the helicopter tail off. And so he lifts it off and kind of like stares at her for a moment. But then I think he realizes that she's not like a threat and that she was trying to help. Because, I mean, that's exactly what he did. He helped this creature. So, you know, Kong does have like a compassionate side, you know. It's like, you know, you mess with me, I'm going to throw down on you. But like, if you're cool, I'm cool, you know.
But to like hammer home the point that like he is compassionate and he actually has like true sentience, like he's able to like not realize that all humans are good or all humans are bad.
Yeah.
Like he has his issues with a lot of humans in those movies. A lot of humans die at his hands. And that's you know, something that happens because they were shooting at him, blah, blah, blah. But he could very easily see a human, realize, wow, the last one hurt me a lot. I'm going to attack this one so that this one doesn't hurt me too. He doesn't do that. He kind of treats every human as they treat him.
Yes.
If that makes sense. You know, like
which is very like human-like, honestly, you know?
Yeah, it's a very intelligent, like sentient thing to do. Like if, you know, if a dog is beaten by a previous owner, like I hate using that as an example, but like if a dog is beaten by a previous owner, the next owner will have troubles training that dog. It'll have trouble, you know, learning to, or the dog will have trouble learning to trust future humans because of prior experience. That's just that becomes their personality. But Kong isn't like an animal, you know. He's not like a normal animal in that sense, where he's able to, you know, separate this human good, this human bad, you know. And you know, later on down the line, we actually find out that he's capable of sign language in Kong, Godzilla versus Kong. So this guy's extremely smart.
He also saves Brie Larson, you know.
Yeah, in that fight with the big bad Skullcrawler, because I think she gets knocked out, or she gets flying.
Yes,
she's like the ocean or lake or something.
She's like on that cliff, and she gets knocked off that cliff into whatever that body of water is, like the ocean that's, you know, kind of snaking through the island. But yeah, she falls off, and he's you know, he like takes her out of the water.
Yeah, Kong's cool. I don't know about you guys. Kong's pretty cool. I do that first scene when they're flying into Skull Island on the helicopters is super beautiful. Just from like a cinematic point of view. Obviously most of it's CGI, and most of like they definitely didn't have actual helicopters like that flying in formation. But it's such a beautiful scene, and then seeing Kong, like the silhouette of Kong in the distance as like the sun was setting, dude, that's an iconic shot right there. And the way that the camera moves around Kong, like within the helicopter cockpits, as they're trying to attack him and he's like grabbing them out of the sky. Yeah, there's a lot of that in this movie that I'm just like, looks great. I kind of miss when blockbusters, you know, did like big bombastic things like that and made it look good. I love this movie. I really do.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I remember going to, they have that ride at Universal where it was the Kong one, and then they updated it when Skull Island came out.
I don't think I remember if I rode it. I went to Universal a couple years back. I don't remember if that was operational at the time. It might have been down.
Yeah, it's one of those like ones where it's like a screen one. You're sitting in something and it kind of moves along and then it stops and you have like screens around you.
There was a time where Universal did that for a lot of rides.
I think they're
moving more towards like coasters now.
Fast and the Furious is like that.
Fast and the Furious. There's a Hogwarts ride that's like that too. Or it's like a Gringotts ride, I think. It's like a Gringotts.
So the Gringotts mine chase. Oh, you're thinking of the one actually in the castle that you're like sitting in the seats.
Yes, yeah. You're sitting in the seats and you're going room from room. And
there's also some practical effects on that one too. But there's the Kong Skull Island is like pretty much like all screens with some like, you know, stuff being sprayed here and there.
Kong guts get sprayed. Kong spittle. Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. What's your favorite ride in Universal? Let me ask you. I don't think I've ever asked you this.
That's a good question.
I have a controversial one. The ride I enjoyed the most when I was there, last time I was there, was the Simpsons ride. It was a crazy like experience. Like, I did not expect that to be half as good as it was, and it was like laugh out loud fun. Like it lasted a good minute too. I think it was like a 5 to 7 minute ride, and it was, you know, coming from Disney where like 2 minutes is like norm, that was awesome.
I like the Simpsons ride, but dude, like, I don't know, the last time I went on it, like, I felt so nauseous getting off of that.
People get a lot of motion sickness on that for some reason. Yeah, I've heard. And I think that's why it's not a common answer.
I think when I had gone when I was younger, I was okay. But, like, for some reason, like, I don't know, now that I'm older, like, I can deal with roller coasters, but... Yeah, I don't know. It's just like now, I guess with age, the whipping around, it just doesn't agree with me as much anymore. And I went to Dollywood in October, and I went on like, oh my goodness, dude, I went on like 6 coasters. By the time that day ended, like I was done. Like I was out.
Out for the count.
I knocked out like at the end of that night. Yeah, dude, like my body had... It's like my body felt like it suffered so much. I was getting whipped around. My head, my brain was rattling in my head. And, you know, that dude, that's what the Hulk ride always, like, it feels like it's taking my like brain and like shaking it. Like my head is a snow globe and my brain is just swirling around in my head. That's what
that ride's ridiculous. Yeah, that ride's ridiculous.
The ride that I would say that I actually really like is the Hagrid's one.
It was down when I was there. So it was like a really bad rainstorm that day and they just closed the ride. And like we were like next in line. We were literally like right there and they closed it. And I haven't gone back since. But yeah, I've heard that ride's good. I've heard the Velocicoaster's good.
So the last time I went on the Hagrid's one, it was raining, but it wasn't storming, but it was raining, and they still let us get on the ride. Dude, I was getting whipped by raindrops. Like, it just, like, because it's going fast, and, like, I'm just getting whipped in the face by rain. It's just, like...
Oh, you know what? That's so fun. You're probably laughing your head off.
Dude, we were... Because I was with Miguel, and him and I were just dying laughing, but just... One, because the ride is really fun. And then two, like, I felt like I couldn't see half the time because my face was getting whipped. And it's fun because they have, like, the sidecar and then the part where you could sit up on the bike. And I've been able to do both. And the bike part is, like, really, really fun because, like, I mean, obviously, like, you're strapped in and it's got, like, a back, but, like, you're sitting up more. Like, it's like you're on an actual motorcycle rather than, like, you're sitting in, like, a little sidecar, you know? So yeah, that part's fun. Yeah, that's like definitely one of my favorite rides.
Awesome. All right. Any last thoughts on Kong Skull Island before we close out our discussion today?
Kong Skull Island is definitely a really good revisit. If y'all haven't seen it or haven't seen it in a while, definitely go back and watch it. Especially since, you know, we've got more MonsterVerse movies coming out. And if you've seen Monarch and you haven't seen this or seen it in a while, it's definitely cool to go back and see this. And it was really awesome watching Monarch right after seeing Kong Skull Island because it felt like a continuation, really.
Yeah, that is a really cool experience. So one thing that you were very curious about, like going into that, and I was very curious about when I was rewatching Monarch, is where exactly does that scene fit? Because there's a scene with, like we mentioned, John Goodman's Bill Randa, that takes place sometime after they land, but before he dies on Skull Island. And there's a scene, obviously, like the helicopters go down, and then later on we have Sam Jackson's character saying something along the lines of, "Where's Randa?" And we cut to Bill Randa, like, sitting down on some rock somewhere. But in between that scene and the, you know, when he first crash landed, he was basically running through the jungle and he was filming something for, you know, his long lost son that we didn't know about. So that's basically like where that scene fits in. And I think it's pretty, the fact that they were able to find a place for that logically was really neat for me.
Yeah, I was so confused at first, but, you know, kind of like when you explained that, it made a lot of sense. I don't know why I didn't think of that, but yeah, I was just thinking that some stuff was being retconned.
It didn't make sense to me at first. Yeah, no, it seemed like a retcon to me as well. And that's, like, I had to, like, actually, like, pull up my digital files of that episode and the movie and just kind of, like, see, like, where would it fit best. And that's pretty much where it fits best. So,
yeah, it makes sense.
Anywho.
What about you? Last words.
Last words. Honestly, the movie's a little bit of a stinker. No.
Ride the ride instead.
I love this movie. I didn't give it a fair chance back in the day. I don't know why, but this wasn't a movie that, like, I loved when I first saw it. I didn't even catch it in theaters when I first, you know, when it was, you know, first around. I saw it, like, a couple years, maybe about a year later, and it didn't really do anything for me. But coming at it with fresh eyes, with a greater respect for the world that they've created, that MonsterVerse, or Legendary has created with the MonsterVerse, and, you know, just being an overall more open-minded film goer, I think, you know, in recent years, this was awesome. This is such a fun movie. I've watched it a couple times in the past couple months in, like, the lead up to the YouTube project that I'm working on right now. And yeah, I'm so happy that it exists. It's such a creative concept, like, that they could have set this movie at any time in history, but, like, Vietnam, who would have thought, like, that would be such a cool time period to explore. Anyway, guys, check this out if you haven't already. It's a fantastic movie. Revisit it if you haven't in a while, because it actually really holds up. So thanks so much for listening to us here for Project Geekology episode 71. Next week, or our next podcast, rather, is going to be on Star Wars episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. Maybe you've heard of it.
Right, yeah, we haven't covered a Star Wars film in a while, and we've covered a good bit of Godzilla, MonsterVerse type films that were like, hey, you know what, let's bring it back and actually, you know, cover a movie that comes out, what, like a few years after this movie takes place?
Yeah, so that this takes place in 73, so
4 years.
That came out in 1980.
Oh, no, 1980, so, yeah, so I'm thinking of the original. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So 7 years.
Yes. 7 years later, one of the best movies ever is released. Thank you, George Lucas and company. Guys, thanks. You can check out our links to our socials in the show notes down below. Please be sure to give us a 5-star rating wherever you're listening to this podcast, and reach out to us on socials. We want to hear what you guys think.
Definitely.
About, like, any show that you listen to, whether it be, you know, our second episode or this week's episode. So anyway, bye guys.
Bye.
Adios, poop heads.